This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Baseball is more than a game. It's part of the American fabric, and that fabric extends all the way to the Rio Grande with the Spanish American League. They, too, would pop the flies, run the bases, and hear the roar of the hometown crowd. It was an experience that brought together communities and imprinted a national identity in a land that was physically closer to Mexico City than to Washington, D.C., and this history is being reclaimed. These innings are being remembered at the Institute of Texas Cultures with Los Peloteros. We're talking about the old Spanish American League baseball here in San Antonio and across South Texas. If you've got memories of these great games, we want to hear from you and these great players. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org, tweet us at @tprsource. With me to talk about this, Gregory Garrett. He's a researcher at the Institute of Texan Cultures, and Joe Sanchez. He is a long family history with the Spanish American League teams, and he is reclaiming that history. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Joe, tell me about your connection to the Spanish American League teams.
Well, primarily with the Sanchez family, especially with Dad, was involved with the Spanish American League dating back to 1926. He was 13 and playing with the big boys at that time.
He was 13?
13, playing in the Spanish American League. It was established in 1926 as Liga Hispana Americana and chartered under the name Spanish American League in 1941. And Dad did play his entire career in the Spanish American League until he was 50.
From 13 to 50, yes. He was playing these games.
Yes.
So he saw a lot of baseball.
A lot of baseball. And he was a player manager, so he was managing some of these teams as well in the 40s.
So what were these teams? Where were they stationed? Who played?
Well, the local teams primarily that were in the Spanish American League back then was a team like Fred's Place that he managed. And most of these boys were all local talent from around the neighborhood. And they would be playing around the area like Polo Field and Brackenridge Park. Vandale Stadium on the west side, located on Laredo and Brazos Street.
Right, and so the names of the teams?
Well, back then you had teams like Fred's Place, you had A&B Axel, you had Dan's Cafe.
So they're named after businesses.
Businesses, that's exactly the support that they had was strictly business.
So about how many teams were in San Antonio?
They would average in this particular league from 5 to 8.
Okay.
Including some of the military teams that were located around the area.
And tell me about the military teams.
The military teams involved Lackland as the Warhawks. It was Fort Sam had two teams, MFSS, which was called Medical Field Service School, BAMC, Randolph, and who was the other team here?
Did Kelly have one?
Kelly Flyers.
Okay, so how important were these teams to their local communities?
Well, I think it brought the communities together. Primarily as players, it was a team effort there, but it was a family thing most of the time. All the families were out there watching games and gathering for family outings. Baseball was where they were all at.
All right, so I'm turning to you, Gregory Garrett, over at the Institute of Texan Cultures. You are bringing this together. You have an exhibit. What's happening at the Institute?
Well, this Sunday, first off, I'd like to say it's our second Sunday, which is free to the general public. The whole entire museum will be free. The program will be free. We're going to have Joe Sanchez, myself, and then Alberto Rodriguez, who is a PhD at A&M Kingsville. He'll be coming up, and we'll all be presenting different presentations on the histories of different regions of Texas.
Because it wasn't just San Antonio. This was all the way to the Rio Grande, Corpus Christi, Laredo.
I know I've got photos from San Diego, Texas, where I've got teams from 1894. So I know for a fact they were playing by 1894. And they were playing in the North Daniel in northern Mexico and along the Rio Grande probably earlier than that. I wouldn't see any reason why. There's discussion among historians exactly when it might have hit South Texas and the North Daniel of Mexico. But I would say by the 1870s, 1880s, that baseball was probably being played in that area. And we're going to try to touch on a few different regions. I know I'm going to be trying to touch on San Diego and New Braunfels, a couple of individuals that were very influential in the Tejano communities in those two towns. And then Alberto will be talking about the opportunities that it offered a bunch of people down in the Rio Grande Valley, whether it was scholarships to college, economic opportunities, a little extra money in your pocket. You know, wages weren't the great in the 20s and 30s and 40s, especially for the Hispanic population. So a $30, getting paid 30 bucks for a baseball game as opposed to 25 cents an hour at the laundromat, like my buddy Pete Mendez, you know, they're going to jump on that opportunity. So more than just building communities and building a voice and carving out a space for them to be able to use that voice socially, politically, it offered a lot of opportunity to the individuals that played the game.
Was this a history that you're having to reclaim, that basically if you weren't doing it, it would be lost?
It's getting there.
I would say so.
Joe, go ahead, answer that.
I think San Antonio in itself is a historical city, and baseball is a big part of that history, I think, and a lot of it is being lost. We don't have particularly a museum primarily that would bring and hold on to a lot of the artifacts that are being lost out there with reference to the old teams that were playing here, local talent, primarily the local talent that played here. We had a lot of professional ball players come out of these organizations that went on to see Major League Baseball. And we don't have any of that history showing anywhere in San Antonio.
Did the local newspaper cover these local games?
Yes. As a matter of fact, here in front of me, I was just looking at an article back in 1948. The San Antonio Light back then would cover it, the Express. We had good sports writers like Dan Cook and Harold Sherwitz back then that would follow a lot of the sports. Of course, they were very sport-minded individuals.
But even in the earliest days, I mean, when did the paper start tracking this type of stuff?
I have articles as far back as 1928 that would come out.
I've come across some from South Texas, Brownsville Herald, and some different things down in South Texas that have gone back to the mid-1930s, so that have to do with Adolfo Arguijo. So they were covering it. It was, I mean, baseball was being played, and you also got to think in these smaller towns out in these rural communities, there wasn't a lot going on. So if you had a slate of games on a Sunday, that's probably where the newspaper was going to be at.
True. You know,
that's where the town was going to be at. And if I could add something real quick, when it comes to the Tejano history of baseball, whether it's semi-pros or major leagues, I don't know that they ever had an individual like a Jackie Robinson that you can turn to and say, this was the shining moment, and this is where it all began to change. And I think that might be one reason why this has been so easily swept under the rug, is because you don't have that one individual that you can point to and right. say, this is the seminal moment.
Sure, know? Or a Satchel Paige type of
exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
We're going to talk more about that and those comparisons as we talk about the Spanish-American League baseball in the earliest days here in South Texas, what kind of barriers they faced, what opportunities were presented. If this is a story that you have something to tell us, we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. Back in 1 minute. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. Throughout the 1900s, the game of baseball spread like wildfire across Texas and through the Tejano communities. The baseball diamond provided a stage for the Hispanic community to carve out identities, prove themselves as equals, and become part of the American experience. So we're talking about the Spanish-American Baseball League. If you have memories of that, you've heard stories about that, we want to hear them. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Also, this Sunday, a free Sunday at the Institute of Texan Cultures, they're going to be having a presentation about this. And with me to talk about that is Gregory Garrett, researcher at the Institute. And also with me is Joe Sanchez. He is collecting this history and packaging up, talking about it. He's got a long family history in the Spanish-American League. So, Joe, tell me more about some of the guys who were local, played local ball, and then they made it to the big show, went pro.
Well, I'm looking back around 1948 at this point, and a gentleman was just inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame here in the Sports Hall of Fame here in San Antonio, none other than Al Amakia, played with Fred's Place back in 1948. Just to name a few, is Joe Harlan, played in the Spanish American League at the time. He was playing with VJ Keefe Mixers here at Richter Field.
So they went on to play like what, like with the big guys.
Yes,
in,
those boys
in,
went on to Major League.
New York.
They went on to play with Major League. Joe, I can't remember where he was. It was Chicago White Sox, if I remember the history on him.
Some of these guys that went to school was like in Span in Mexican ball. They had a professional league in Mexico. Did they go play there too?
I don't recall them going to play in Mexico. And I know Al was playing with Frizz. They were playing teams like Piedras Negras and Monterrey. But they were all part of the Spanish American League when they went down to play.
And Gregory, what do you anything to add about that?
Yeah, I've got a couple of individuals I'd like to talk about. I've already brought up Adolfo Arguijo out of San Diego. He was at Corsicana, which is a Texas League team, in 24, had a beautiful year, and ended up in New Orleans at spring training, for the Yankees. And this was in their heyday. He had about a month there that he was able to work out with the team, and then he was optioned back to Corsicana. So I guess he had a sip of coffee. But he has a few quotes about Lou Gehrig and Babe and a couple of the other guys that were on that team and how tough of a team it was going to be for him to make. There's also another individual out of Mission, Texas, and I'm pretty sure quite a few people around San Antonio have heard the name Leo Naha. Leo Naha, I apologize. And Leo actually, he played with the Indians in Major League Ball, and he was actually the first Hispanic American to make it to Major Leagues. But he had to say that he was a Native American to make it because they weren't letting Mexican guys into the Major Leagues at the time.
Yeah, let me ask you about the color barrier, you know, so that did exist. You had to, you couldn't say that you're Mexican. You had to come across as Native American. Is that a common story?
Yeah, it is. Adolfo, even later in his life, admitted to a friend of mine, Tommy Molina, that he doesn't think he made the Yankees team for that exact reason, that they didn't want any Mexican guys on the team, which, you know, sign of the times. You know, we've obviously moved way past that with Latin America and their
A-Rod
prevalence in baseball right now, exactly. But even in San Antonio, and Joe can probably attest to this, even with the Spanish-American leagues, they were, up until a certain point, they were all very compartmentalized. Like you had the I-90 league out towards Castroville, and that was made up of all the white guys and the Alsatians out in Duhanis and Divine and all of those places out in that area. And
Burning.
All of these teams stayed really compartmentalized until, I don't know, Joe, when would you say that we really started to see integration?
I really didn't see it particularly until maybe the late 50s, maybe early 60s. Very little at that point.
Would they play each other?
Yes. Yeah. When it would come, if they were representing a particular organization or league, yeah, they would come meet each other, primarily in the playoffs, so to speak.
Okay.
But it was pretty well separate.
I'm going to take a call real quick.
Yeah,
the number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join our conversation talking about old-time Spanish American League baseball. And Quirky has called in. Quirky, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I really like your show a lot. Just wanted to let you know that my grandfather, I'm 62, so my grandfather used to play in the early 1920s in Eagle Pass, Texas. I still have his shoes and his outfit that he wore at the games. And just a quick story, he and his group had gone to play another small town. On their way back, they stopped in Uvalde, Texas to eat. And, of course, they told them they wouldn't serve them because they were Mexicans. My grandfather was light-skinned and light-haired, and so he went back later, and he went in and ordered 12 hamburgers. And when they brought him out to him, he says, "No, I'm not taking them because you don't serve my kind," and walked out.
Nice.
That's a great story, Quirky. And so what position did your grandpa play?
Oh my gosh, you would ask me that. I don't know.
All right.
And my grandmother has passed away, but my dad knows, and he's still alive. He's 90 years old.
Okay, well, we want to keep all those stories alive, and that's why we're talking about them today. So thank you for calling in.
Quirky, if you ever want to call the Institute and maybe do an oral history with me, I'd love to do it.
Yeah, well, I'm on the advisory board, but I didn't know that this was happening.
All right, and again, keep those items, those artifacts. That's what they are. They're relics. Keep them in safe.
And we'd love to see you Sunday.
If you want.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate that. So, Joe, tell me about your reaction to Quirky's story. I mean, it's a sad story about the discrimination and the ugly prejudice that people faced, and I'm sure that was a common experience.
And that was happening up to 1957. I remember going up to Cushing, Oklahoma with the team, Saldana Food Stores here, and they were all Hispanic on that team, and getting on a bus with my mother to go to the ball game we were asked to move to the back of that particular bus. Of course, they were dealing with the wrong individual when they dealt with Mom. This was 1957, so it was prevalent, and it was happening.
So it brings to the thing about this is an American experience. So how important was that to many of these players that they were playing the American game?
Well, I think it was their way out. Primarily, they loved the game, but it was giving them the opportunity to show their talents throughout the season. Mm-hmm. These guys would play up to 55 and 60 ball games in 1 year. Mm-hmm. So this was a way out for them.
We've heard a lot about how baseball was an important institution for assimilation during the great immigration periods of the United States, and people would turn to that and use that as a vehicle for that. So, Gregory?
I was going to kind of, on that point, and Joe says it was a way out. I see that it was also a way in. You know, it was a way in to carve out a space in society for yourself and to show the other groups in your community that you had that same competitive spirit, that your community would come out and pull for you. It allowed these individuals a chance to become a bigger part of the American experience. That's kind of how I saw it. It opened a lot of doors into, you know, quote unquote assimilation, if you want to use that term. And kind of going on the segregation bit that we were talking about a little bit ago, I'm working with another family down in South Sand, the Zamoras, and Tony Zamora, kind of to back up what Joe was saying, he used to go out to Castroville to play. And out in Castroville, it's predominantly Alsatian French. And he would go out there, and this is a story that Tony told me. He's like, yeah, I used to go out there and you know, they'd make fun of me. They didn't really want me on the team, Mexican guy, until I got out there and started swinging the bat and throwing the ball. And just from my research, once they see how talented you are, they can get past the skin color pretty quick. So once they realize how talented Tony was, you know, and they call him a wetback, this and that, and he's like, you know what? I'm just a brown German, fellas. Just think of me as a brown German. And after that, it was all good. So little stories like that, you know, it may have taken small baby steps, but the fact that Tony had the courage to go out to Castroville and go and play on a team with nothing but a bunch of other white guys on it and be accepted by that team just because of baseball, because of your talents in the game, I think that speaks a lot to how baseball helped Hispanic culture assimilate.
Okay, let's get another caller on the line. Ed. Hey, Ed, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, is this me?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Oh, sorry. It's Ted, not Ed.
Okay.
That's the reason I was pausing. Yeah, I just wanted to know, my nephew recently traveled to Louisiana to play a sports game, and while he was there, he was told to go back to Mexico since he was Mexican, but he's really American. And I'm wondering, is this resurgence of this kind of, you know, racism against Hispanics resurging again, kind of, you know, I mean, obviously not as bad as what it was, you know, 100 years ago, but it seems like it's ramping back up again. And I'm wondering, are you guys noticing this within the sports world for Hispanics? Is it coming out?
Well, Ted, I'm sorry that your son had to go through that terrible experience. And we'll see if we can get some reaction to that. But thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Anything? I mean, it's been around. You can, it only takes one knucklehead to ruin it.
You're never going to get rid of it 100%. You know, I mean, there's always going to be someone, like you say, some knucklehead out there that's going to hold whatever thoughts they want to hold. But, I mean,
they're just looking for something to drag you down.
Yeah, in my research, and I mean, Joe may
be able to, and you go out on the field and you show them what's
exactly.
What.
Exactly. And I think, especially nowadays, with the participation in Little League, and I'm just speaking from a local point of view, San Antonio, Texas point of view, the participation in Little League that you see and the different things, I haven't run across that in the people that I've spoken with and the families that I've spoken with. It seems like San Antonio was able to break through that barrier pretty well once we got through the 70s. Wouldn't you say, Joe?
I mean, I would say so, but there's still some incidents that are happening out there, and they're pretty well kept up to a minimum, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I can think back of some of the teams that we had in the Span Am up to 2005 when I disbanded it and we had to go play a tournament in Houston. And we experienced a lot of that there, and it was 2005. But here again, it was minimal and confined to one or two teams that were in that particular tournament.
So going back to the old Spanish American League, Joe, why is it so important to you to keep these memories alive?
It's a great game. I love baseball, and that's the way these guys that played back then were. And it's such an important history for San Antonio, not only for the gentlemen that played, but for their families. And now the grandkids that are coming up, this is history. This is history that was made, and it's history that needs to be saved somewhere along the line.
And Gregory, when people are coming to you and they're bringing you their stories, and you heard it on the line, you know, guys talking about his granddad, there's a lot of pride there.
Yes, that's what I've found. The passion that I've found in the people that I've spoken with has matched my passion. My dad turned me on to baseball at a very young age. I had to read Charlie Lau's hitting book. I had to read Ted Williams' hitting book. We had the baseball encyclopedias. And I'm doing it for him. I'm also doing it for a lot of the families that I grew up with in Lockhart, Texas. The Zapatas, the Partidas, the Maciels, the Carrizales. I'm trying to present something that they can take as much pride in as a community, as families, as I take pride in having known them and in what I'm doing right now.
All right, so Gregory, before we run out of time, certainly. One more time, remind us about what's going to be happening Sunday at the Institute of Texan Cultures.
All right, Sunday, we're open at 12 o'clock. The program will start at 2 o'clock. We will have memorabilia set up that will span different regions of Texas. The missions have donated 50 baseballs to us that we're going to hand out to the first 50 children through the door so that some of the old-timers can sit down and do autographs for them on their baseballs. We've got a ton of photos.
It's all free to get in.
All free to get in, yes, sir.
All right, Sunday.
2 to 4.
All right, this is The Source on KSTX.